Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant, and I'm still loving you. I'm looking down.
Words You Cannot Say, written by our very own Jay Hatter with the musical stylings of Shout Even Shy. And this is What the Flock with your hostess, moi, Pretty Bird. This is brought to you, this show and many others, by A Team of Voices, which is a wonderful group of fabulous people on allpoetry.com, the world's largest online poetry site. Don't mind my background noise. I have a sick puppy and she's a menace. So I apologize for that. And tonight we are talking all things commitment, whether you're committed to your job, to a relationship, to whatever goals you have, or an insane asylum. Makes no difference to me. You know, it takes a lot to, stick with anything. And so tonight, that is what we are talking about. And so let's say hello to our guests that have called so far. Say hello, Rack.
Hello, Rack.
And Sky.
Hello.
And let's say hello to Mr. A.P. Taylor. Hey, A.P.
Hey, Pretty Bird. How are you?
I am good. Today is... we won't mention the which anniversary it is, but it's a big one, and so it has been a busy day, and I figure since I had a show, I might as well have a, fitting-ish So that is where that came from. So what comes to mind when you guys think commitment? Like, you know, because not everybody goes to relationship. You know, that's an easy one because there's a fear of commitment and there is, you know, vows and loyalty and all of that stuff. But that's not always the first thing on people's minds. So when you hear commitment or committed or, you know, I mean, if I hear it as its root of commit, my mind goes murder, crime, horrible things. So the last thing on my mind is any kind of relationship, anything. So where does the word take you?
Yeah, I'm with you. Sadly, my mind first goes to the insane asylum. You need to be committed. I don't know if it's what shaped my personality or not, or, you know, the sick poppy idea, but yeah, it's relatable to me. So that's where my head goes. It's twisted. So committed kind of fits right in with that theme to me as well.
You see, at least I'm in good company.
They're coming to take us away. Haha.
Ah, he to the funny farm. And I couldn't think of a song. Well, I had thought of many songs on various types of commitments. Like there's that one, there so many. But I couldn't land on what side of the word I wanted to open with. So none. That's where I landed on zero. So Sky, what does the word mean to you or bring to mind, like, first and foremost?
I bring it to mind all the commitments I have. But, you know, I take my commitments very seriously. That's what I think about. I think about everything that I am, that takes my time, that I am committed to, my godchildren, doing the shows, which I really do like, but it's a commitment to be there at a certain time, put the time of work into it. Family, work, you know, all those things to me are commitments. You know, I'll be here and I'll do this and I'll pick this up. And I think that if you have if you're committed to things that you enjoy doing, that you love, that, you know, I think that's pretty good in life. I think that's a good way to be committed.
Absolutely. And what about you, AP?
Well, I sort of go all definitional on this pretty bird, except I go to breakfast, of course, and I think about the chicken and the pig, and I think about the chicken being involved and the pig being committed, and that's the difference, you see.
That's funny. And now I want bacon, but okay, that's fine. And okay, my dog has a foot fetish and very sharp teeth.
Your dog's committed to annoying you.
Well, I never let her in here with me, but she's having a really bad night of breathing, and she's had some anxiety, and now she thinks she wants to play, and it's like 11 o'clock, and I am not in that kind of playful mood, little girl. So now she's just bothering me. But
that's pretty good. Can I come on early, if that's okay, because I've got to disappear off again for business stuff, unfortunately.
Absolutely. And Sky does too. So I was going to have her go first.
I'll wait for AP.
Which was my question.
You sure? Okay. Now you're going to have a whole heap of poems about commitment. I'm prepared to accept, Pretty Bird, but you're not going to have another one like this. I've got no idea where this came from. But it's there, yeah. So this is my poem. It's now on board.
Awesome.
It's entitled "Weren't the Commitments a Band in the 80s?" And it goes a little bit like this: The Commitments, a band from the 80s, big brassy sound with neat songs, grabbed from a couple of decades of music. And they had a swagger, and that was before Mustang Sally was let loose in her Ford. I believe the style is called rhythm and blues. And that explains commitment pretty well. As often, commitment finds a rhythm between two people. There are offsets, there is compromise, and from the everyday, we can infer the commitment blues. What happens, though, when the saxophone is off-key? the backing singers have won too many tequilas, or music tastes move on. And that rhythm is disturbed, not once, but imperceptibly, on a number of occasions, until we know something is not all right. When we find ourselves in a Kendrick Lamar song, high atop a street pole, and falling, shot by an invisible gun to the ground, and that Mustang is running you down upon the breeze you once floated. Banged up, you wait for the sirens, hoping you will find it all again when the emergency room lets you go, and you let go into that groove again. End poem.
Well, that was amazing. And, love the title, because
yeah.
You have a way of weaving a story, and it just kind of pulls you in all these little unexpected ways. I am being eaten alive. I apologize for my disconnected response, because I'm going to have somebody grab this girl, because obviously she knows I'm busy and she needs attention, and that's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
I love this. I believe the style is called Rhythm and Blues. And there's this, you know, and it's lovely. And there's this lilt in that kind of innocent suggestion that I just love. Like, I can absolutely hear it rise, you know. And that explains commitment pretty well. This is beautiful. And it tells what happens, though, when the saxophone is off-key, the backing singers have one too many tequilas, or the music tastes move on, and that rhythm is disturbed, not once but imperceptibly on a number of occasions, until we know something is not all right. I love this. You kind of pull us into this kind of place beneath music that's real and focused and still kind of steeped in that kind of feeling that's hard to describe, where it's there but there are no words. And I just absolutely love this, and I'm going to have to write you a much better comment when I'm not being eaten alive. So, Rock and Tour, what are your thoughts?
I'm going to have to be a little irreverent, and I mean, you know, there's a lot of genius in your observations, and which leads me to say, you know, the commitments, tying the commitments to the band and relationships, and then mentioning, you know, the bad sax ruining a relationship, I really mm-hmm. enjoyed that. But the whole thing overall, you know, I had a smile when you said that they were a band, because I was aware of that. So that was one of the places my brain did go. But you know, you mentioned it implicitly, and then you kind of expound on the meaning of it, and you know, you go down that road with, you know, the how when you start to look at the definition, you know, that there's that whole daisy chain and of events that can, you know, explain it, you know, quite clearly. So it was beautiful the way that you wove it and made this tapestry of brilliance.
Thank you, Rex.
And Sky, your thoughts?
I love the metaphor. I thought it was a really great metaphor, and I actually enjoyed most of the section that Pretty Bird actually highlighted with the tune going off, and I felt like at the beginning, you were speaking very generally about this music, but then as you go on, you kind of dig deeper into that metaphor, and a bit of self-reflection and a bit of worldly reflection. And I like that about it, as if it were peeling off those layers and getting to the core, those interpersonal relationships. Really well done.
Thanks, Scott. Thank you.
Sorry. My dog runs like a pig. I did not mean to be this distracted. She's supposed to have been sleeping. It is not working. I'm trying to, like,
hide in the bathroom. That's what I do.
Yeah,
but
she's feisty, and I'm tethered
to
my
pillow
computer.
And get in the tub.
Well, maybe after the show.
Lock the door.
I am low-key, like, manic texting my kids to, like, walk her and, like, give me a break. And they're, like, ensconced in video games, and their phones are charging or off, and or they're ignoring me because, you know, they're teenagers. They're not okay. So go ahead and put yours up.
Sky,
yes. Hold on a second. I'm going to mute to hand this little terror off to my child. So don't start reading yet, but do get it up for me.
And pretty bird, I'm going to say goodbye to yourself and Sky and Rack and head back and get some work done. But thank you. And it's very rare that I go with the non-rhyming poem, but I had to do that. So I hope you feel honored.
It was beautiful, and I'm so glad you made it to the show. Thank you so, so much.
Thanks, Rebecca. Thanks, Rat. Thanks, Scott. Cheers.
Go ahead and you put yours up. Okay. One more second, and then you can read and talk amongst yourselves for 2 seconds. My apologies. but apparently, this is a dog-sized piranha. So hold on one moment.
And she was talking about the dog when she said she's supposed to be asleep, Sky, not you.
I'm supposed to be asleep, too.
Well, supposed to
whenever
be.
Whenever I think of piranhas, I think of that movie, Jungle to Jungle. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
I've recognized the name of it. There's been quite a few piranha movies that kind of infamous. But, you know, the obvious ones have piranha in the name, Jungle to Jungle. I recognize it, but I don't remember it right off the top of my head.
It had, like, Tim Allen in it.
Oh, my God. He's got a storied career, let me tell you. I like that. Because they get ridiculous.
Okay. My feet are still intact. My son took my little demon spawn. I love her. She's awesome. Okay, I can concentrate. Whoo, here we go. Okay, I am calm and ready to listen to your fabulousness, Miss Sky. So whenever you're ready.
All right, just now I'm committed to doing this like 27 episode epilogue of Star Wars Journey on Slice of Life. Because it really is going to be like 27 episodes of shows devoted to Star Wars, so I feel like that's a lot of commitment. And I really wanted to read this poem. And this pretends that I'm Count Dooku.
Oh, my
you know,
God.
When you first told me that you were planning this out, and it's like a year-long thing, I was like, that is organization.
It's more than a year.
On an epic level that I will never achieve. It's quite, quite impressive. So, you know, kudos to you. That is some serious, serious commitment and some attention to detail and research and knowledge. I mean, people don't know. It's a thing. So I'm all excited.
Okay. All right. This is Hi, May, Hi, Shalal, the Grievous One, in the voice of Count Dooku. I see in the Force, Sidious Plot, the Dreamer and the Dreamt One. He yield his will, the Bogan, son to the gold-rimmed eye and the red-skinned reptilian, with bat-like gaunt, shattering grimace, jaw and chin frilled with tusks, long-stemmed arms sprouting four-fingered claws, the toe-walker of wild face. Though at present, this young, paley warlord is but a tattooing grain among star system dunes. He is hailed less mortal and more kin to the gods, wearing the grave of his father of the Moomoom husk. A trail of blood paint to quench its thirst. The Kalish are a proud kin, Felian wrath as devout and safe, living both in spirit and body, awarding fealty to the shaman, and tucking honor in their teeth. But the one called Dreamer, dreamt by Rondu Lai Kamar, will soon find the bitter salt will soon find those bitter salts, a creaky of ale gulped by lover's tongue. And as the body of his second self is torn limb from limb, lost to the Genoa sea, stolen and stowed by fate, he will bear a new moniker, the tortured, the fallen god, the grievous one. It is on the hide of this rage retribution will reign, when the Huck wars will turn and know his grievance. But oh, how cruel is fate, for when the Kalish gain freedom and chase the Yamlin back to the scourges of their homes, the insectoid sentient species will cry wolf to the Republic. Vast creatures they are, playing parliament and coin, silent in oppression, now boisterous in its effect. They will aid such terrorists and make enemies of my pawn. Here is when I will blend to shadow, while Kalish and squalor turn to the trade confederacy, the puppets of doom, the dreamer and the dreamt one, grievous in his attempts to save his planet. He will yield to the bogan. And when he refuses to yield enough, a slight of the Sith will render him obedient. With iron bomb, meant chamber, I will sculpt the remade, poison mind and lobotomized memory, chain-link cybergen of its limb, till all that remains are those gold-rimmed eyes and meat and a meat sack of housed organs and a thin ghost of spinal tap. I will raid the dead, siphoning midichlorians from the cadaver body. My creation will not wield the force, but it will yield the savor of Cyphodia. He will wake with no god, no honor, a slave to his construction, the night slayer, the butcher of High Puri, the dreamless and the drunk one, and the once drunk one, and home. Sorry about that. My phone's really small.
There is zero need to apologize. I am loving this. And, I will sculpt the remade, poison mind, lobotomized memory, chain-link cybergenetic limbs till all that remains are those gold-rimmed eyes, a meat sack of housed organs, and a thin ghost of spinal taps. That's freaking awesome. This is fabulous. There is so much. Okay, first of all, the research. I cannot. With all the precision, this is more in depth. I love Star Wars, and this is more in depth than I have ever even bothered to look. But I love this. I love that it is in his voice. I love that, it's all of it. Like, if you didn't know anything about who he was, you would know he is not a Jedi. And there's not a whole lot of goodness here. And so it's absolutely fabulous. But your verbiage, especially in that section, you don't do full dark often, but when you do, you're just brilliant. Well, you're always brilliant, but when you do, you're brilliant. And that part that I read, that whole meat sack, that whole reconstruction, the remade, I love it. I struggle to find things you write that I don't like. So, I may be a little bit biased. So, Raconteur, what are your thoughts?
And might I just say, I love writing in the perspective of Count Dooku. So when I wanted to do Grievous, I was like, well, I could do Grievous in his perspective, but really Grievous was so manipulated. So really the story couldn't be told in his perspective because he was a pawn, So what's the best way to avoid that and to keep the sinister tone? Well, actually told by Dooku, because that's the one who really twisted that storyline and used him and all those things. So, and plus, I just really love Christopher Lee. So, you know, there we go. Anyway, thank you. Thank you pretty much.
My pleasure. I'm so thrilled that you brought that. And I'm absolutely just in awe of the amount of time and effort you take to do the things that you do so well. It is absolutely a commitment. And you are very much, you're proud of that responsibility where you take pride in a job well done, and you take the time to do things well, where most people, me included, half the time, you know, if I can get away with it, I will half-ass some shit, and then, you know, I'm like, we're good. It's good enough. I've got other things to do. Let me move on. But your attention to detail is phenomenal. So that's awesome.
The Sky.com study program, that's what it is. She dissects it, and you know, sometimes, you know, more often than not, I'll watch a movie or whatever, and I'll absorb some of the detail, but not to the depth that, you know, you kind of lose track sometimes of, you know, who did what and who's responsible for what, or, you know, you miss some of the things, like, you know, when someone's hair is supposed to be messed up, you know, because of something was shot out of sequence or whatever. You know, it's not that kind of movie, kid. You know, little details like that really are just, you know, the kind of things that you bring into your poems. And the detail about, you know, Grievous, I almost feel like, you know, I could put one together now. I just need a tin can and a bag of body parts. So, you know, and I have to figure out where to find the midichlorians too, because, you know, if they're anything like the price of gas, I can't afford it. But yeah, I you know, there's, you know, a lot of detail that adds to the depth of the story that, you know, just adds to the enjoyment of watching the movie even, you know, and this is outside of it and, you know, definitely stands on its own as far as the story of, you know, the background. And, you know, again, like you mentioned, you know, you did it in Dooku's voice. You tend to do that, you know, at least in my experience, I like when you do that, and you tend to do it, I won't say frequently, but, you know, more often than not, you take on the thought of the character and speak in their voice, which is, you know, I wouldn't even call it a plot device or a literary device. It's just, you know, a brilliant way to tell a story. And, you know, you do it lovely and, you know, in rhyme on top of everything else. So I enjoyed it.
Thank you, Rex.
You know, I have to say,
I like the first person perspective.
Oh, absolutely. I have to say, you weave stories on all kinds of things, whether it be dragons or real life, whether it is that fabulous poem about your grandmother's journals or just the behind the scenes of feelings. There's this view of the world that you have that you tend to lace in just fabulous verbiage. Your word choices are amazing, whether they are firm or gentle. They're always stunning. And so, which is why I should just make a folder, you know, just a list of all your stuff and just be done with it. And, you know, but I do, I grab hold of things that I want to read over and over. And sometimes I stop myself from putting them on my recommended, and I'll put them on one of my other lists simply because I'll go through my recommended list and keep on reading them. And I will get to yours. And there are some poems that I've had on there that I absolutely love that I skip over to get to your next one. So, you know, I may be a little bit of a fan. I'm just saying.
No, back at you.
The thing, you know, when you mentioned commitment and the thing about Sky that, you know, more over everything else, I think, you know, when you talk about that perspective, you know, you're talking about, you know, good writing. You know, when you tell a story in first person, you have to stay, you know, you have to commit to that perspective. And that's, you know, not just good writing, that's the way that you do it. So, you know, otherwise the story just doesn't make sense, you know, and that's part of what it takes to do, you know, what you do. So that type of commitment on top of everything else, you know, people don't associate that, I don't think, with a story per se, you know. Even though that's what, you know, when you hear it, you know, you recognize it, but you don't necessarily understand why it just feels right.
Staying character. It's like LARPing in poetry.
That's awesome. That's a fabulous analogy. Here, I have put Miss Kay on the board, and I have a SoundCloud for her, or an audio for her. This is the Sound of Our Hearts. Anniversary of Love. So I'm assuming, I have not read it, that it is, you know, this beautiful, beautiful tribute to our resident lovebirds, because they're fabulous. Her and Steven are just kind of amazing. And so here we go. I'm all excited to hear it. So enjoy.
The topic for me was a no-brainer. When you speak of commitment, I sometimes find it funny when I look at the number of how many years I've been together with my husband, who is also a member here, Stephen 76. But in October, we will celebrate 25 years of marriage, and in July, 26 years of being together. And in between all that, we have a son that will be 25 as well. And for the ones that get to be together for decades, it doesn't come easy, but if you get to this point of being together for this long, it means you knew how to dance through the hard times to, I guess, dance through the good times and find the love and hold it always. So I call this the Sound of Our Hearts, Anniversary of Love. Ballroom floor, a sweep in feet, step in unison. Silk fabric, kissing platform and wrinkled shine, a twirl in the glimmers of moonlight. Eyes lock the rhythm of a beat and valves thumping. Music in step with the beat of their structural fall. Dance of the night in the dance hall days of youth. Kiss me under the elm tree passionately tonight. Top hat, dressed in a gentleman in black suit in. Sharpen the clothes in to stoke the flames. Hazy visages frame the golden night's promenade. Swinging the Viennese waltz. Tapping in step, the shuffle of our feet glider. Toe to toe, poised to plier to the swing. Alignment, cheek to cheek, a footwork counterclockwise. Choreography of the voices, breathing stainless. Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers are we. Heels and giggles, sealing their dance of syncopation. Musical of equality follows her lead, as the dance leads him to her, as our chases is built to last. End poem.
Well, that is beautiful. You know, it reminds me, and for those who aren't married, you know, maybe one day you'll get to what this, the moment that this speaks to me, which is that, and I understand that it's probably not because I get things wrong all the time, but this absolutely reminds me of that very first dance after the wedding. And it is a nerve-wracking thing. There's a bunch of joy, but, you know, everybody's staring at you. And while most people love that, I am not one of those people. And so it was a very nerve-wracking thing. But when you get into moving, into that rhythm, into the arms, the room fades away. There is nothing but those moments where you are cheek to cheek, hand to hand, hand on waist, just free to start forever. And it is so beautiful to capture that dance and every dance after that, that is so full of affection that it's like second nature. You know, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers are we. Heels and giggles sealing their dance of syncopation. And I get, if, now, not every couple dances, but when they do, if there's something that happens, if there's music on and you're doing dishes or whatever, and should the mood strike when you kind of grab her and twirl or just a quick dip or whatever it is in the middle of the mundane every day, it's absolutely giggle-worthy, and it that's what love feels like, and it'll make you blush, and it'll make you just be kind of back in that those beginning stages of love, but it's better because it's the older stages of love. But when you can still get that giddy, that's kind of what it's all about. You know, it's just so lovely, and I love musical metaphors for grand things because music is one of those art forms that absolutely lends itself to grandeur, to big band music or full symphonies, and the way it moves through your spirit and binds you to moments. And I absolutely love that this is a wonderful anniversary tribute to a love that is that grand. So it is just quite stunning. And let's say hello to Miss Deborah Lee. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Did you happen to catch Kay's poem?
Yes, actually. I think this is incredible. I love the fact that it's an anniversary of love, so it's like they've been together, but they're still cheek to cheek. And I like that it's done through dance because, well, some people say, and I can't say I disagree, that dancing is very intimate. It's as intimate as you can get with your clothes on, haha. But there's, I think you mentioned the hand on the hip, the gentle sway, the subtle touches, all those things that you feel, and then you read her metaphors throughout this one are fabulous. And I know I've already heard you guys say it, but like heels and giggles, there's something so incredible about just those three lines or words. I think that all the way through from the first word to the last, there's a subtle tenderness that shows and that it's a really, really romantic poem. A dynamic duo-ish poem.
Yes, ma'am. And it's beautiful because, you know, there are resident lovebirds. You know, it takes a lot to stay together and to work through it. And it's funny because I know a lot of people that find love to be kind of a transient state where maybe you don't not love them, but you like them a little bit less today. So, you know, so, and the thing is that any committed relationship, it is work, you know, you have all the good stuff, but the good stuff comes with the time put in, the compromises, the daily stresses, the anxiety, all of that kind of adds strength to the good stuff, but it takes work to go through it. And both sides have to be willing to do that. And when that happens, it is just, people want Cinderella fairy tales that you know, that happily ever after, but you know, Cinderella doesn't get into how that happily ever after stays happily ever after because it takes work. And so I think that this is a wonderful, wonderful, loving tribute to a quarter century of that hard work and love that feeds it. So I just loved it. And Rag and Tour, now that I'm going to shut up, feel free to comment, please.
You mentioned dancing while you're doing the dishes. I kind of know someone that does that. It made me smile when you said that. But the poem itself, you know, comparing a relationship to dancing was absolutely appropriate and beautiful because, you know, if you're out of sync, you step on somebody's feet. And, you know, that very much can be applied to the relationship in a lot of ways. You know, one person leads usually, one person follows. You don't necessarily switch roles with that. And that's just, you know, the way things flesh out. But then there's also the intimacy of the contact and the dancing and the cheek-to-cheek and those moments together. Even when it's not a cheek-to-cheek type of dance that she describes, you know, it still has that feel. And, you know, I couldn't help but smile, too, because, you know, she mentioned in the beginning, you know, Stephen runs around over here. And, you know, some of us, you know, look at Stephen and, you know, for me personally, I think more D&D Ranger than Top Hat. So when she said that, I had to kind of giggle to myself because I never in my life could have pictured Stephen in a Top Hat, not even in a formal wedding setting. So she said that and my mind was like, whoa, no. So I really thought this was great, though. You know, it was a lovely view of, you know, how they look at each other and, you know, their relationship. And, you know, like you said, you know, they come across as that they're our resident lovebirds. So it was beautiful.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for sharing that with us, Kay. And thank you for hanging out with us on the board. I am a crappy board hostess because I'm all behind over here and reading things over there. And so my apologies. I miss a whole lot of stuff. But I'm glad I'm glad that you dropped for us. I'm glad that you brought that because, you know, I love real love poems. You know, we get a lot of, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong, in my experience, we get a lot of poems on what people think love should be, on what people thought love was, on what, you know, they hope love will look like for them, and all of these bits and pieces of the possibilities of love, which is all well and good, but it's the poems that are in the meat of it, the ones that, whether it's a happy poem, a sad poem, an angry poem, so long as it is real, they tend to hold into me more. And I enjoy the happy ones, but I really have a deep respect for those who go through normal daily stuff and still have that love and honor and all of that still wrapped into there, because so many poems are like, I love you, I hate you, I love you, I hate you, I love you, I hate you. And this is beautiful. It's just beautiful. I love the love, and it's my anniversary, so I'm feeling all lovey. So it was just fabulous. So, you know, I will stop gushing. It is fine. So Miss Deborah Lee, are you ready to read?
Yes, please. Sure, though. We can go after Kay.
Well, I could put mine up, and you know, I know guarantees how that's going to go.
I think it's right in the middle of excellence. Wonderful. Okay.
Yeah, like you're not excellent. Whatever. I'm excited.
Yes, here we go. Okay, so I thought this picture was really, really cool, and I was thrilled to have a chance to write to it. And I kind of went out of the box a little. It's called Commitment is an Invisible Rope You Choose to Wear. And here we go. The red latex balloon traps the helium, and the hemp twine tethers the balloon. Do not slice the tie or tug out the knot. That balloon may rise to the opal moon. Chains and shackles restrain the ankle. Balls and chains hamper footsteps too. Metal handcuffs lock to bind two wrists as a police officer fastens them on you. But if my rope's hitched to the door star, it is just tethered for climbing up to space, then ziplining down to any place you are. By choice. That's commitment.
That's awesome. That is that's wonderfully vivid. And there's a lot in there for brevity, so that's kind of fabulous. Because I am me, metal handcuffs locked to bind to wrist, the police officer fastens them on you. I was like, oh, well.
Take me away.
Because I can't help myself. But I love this. I love that. First, I have a purse that looks just like that picture. And it's my favorite little toenail purse. And I love that it's this whole, well, the way I see it, I could be wrong. And I have that disclaimer for everything because Lord knows I see things sideways through weird glasses and, you know, whatever. But it has this feeling for me that, you know, for me, balloons are very innocent, very joyful things. Because they remind me of childhood and all, you know, anyways, they're big old round bubbly things. And to me, they symbolize, you know, innocence and goodness and things like that. But then you've got that, which is hopeful and happy. And then you are, you know, that'll take you to that opal moon. But there's chains and shackles and balls and chains and handcuffs and things that are tethering you to where you are, to that place that is not where you want to be. And through all of that, oh, I'm going to get a little emotional. Oh, who knew? All right. Give me a second. And through all of that, there is that hope that if it's tied just right, I can still get to you wherever that may be, that the rest of this cannot bind me because I am already bound, that it doesn't matter what, you know, whether it be responsibilities, whether it be whatever logistical, logical realities, you know, that suck the joy out of moments, whatever it is, isn't strong enough to keep me tied here. And I find that to be just stunning. And it's like what I was saying a little earlier. It takes work, you know. Sometimes you need to break those chains. Sometimes you need to just finagle your way out of them for a little bit. Or, you know, you need to be on your tippy toes because you only need an extra inch just to get a closer glimpse of what, just enough to get you through the next day, you know? And so that's what this feels like to me, that there is this joy and all that is good, and the rest of it falls away or becomes insignificant when you have those moments. And that is beautiful. And another facet of that to me is also, if it's worth fighting for, fight. You know, like, you know, you break those chains, you fight out of what is holding you down, especially like if they are needing you or that, you know, and, you know, you got to be like, you know, that wolf that is in that trap and he has to like gnaw off his own foot so that he can just escape and do what he's doing. And so I kind of like that tenacity that's in there as well. So I don't know how you meant it, but that's what it felt like to me. And,
you were doing really good until we got to chewing off that foot. I was like, wait a minute.
Well, you know, it's because, you know, with the balls and chains and all the tethers and everything that's keeping you here. But, you know, that hope of getting wherever they are, you know, first you got to let go of this. But there is, you know, working through it and fighting through it. And this, to me, speaks to both, you know. Hopefully there's no gnawing involved. But, you know, you're a good girl. I know you've got chutzpah. You know, you do what he's doing. I know.
What are you talking about?
It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Because, you know, how many people have you known that are on the cusp of what feels like this wonderfully bound love story, but you know, society and rules I grew up with and all of this stuff makes them afraid to take that one extra step, because what if it doesn't work? And then they wonder why 30 years from now they haven't found love. Well, you kind of did, you know. It's just, how bad do you want it, you know, because it's not always easy. And that's a difficult thing, too, because you never know. I mean, it's a lot to gamble. And sometimes people suck, and what if you're wrong? But, you know, here's the thing. If you think you're wrong, wait for the guy that doesn't let you doubt, you know. If you think you're wrong, maybe you don't want to walk away from your whole life for that one. You know, wait for the one that you can't imagine a minute that he doesn't exist in your world. You know, and there's a big difference, but people just don't seem to understand that. But, you know, that's just me. And again, I am talking a lot tonight. I don't know what my problem is. And so, Rackator, you
awesome comment. Thank you very much.
You know, an hour later, I feel like I need one of those SpongeBob segues.
3 hours later.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would say Stephen and Kay have a button.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah, well,
they've got like 10 iterations of that expression, yeah. But as far as your poem, you know, the underlying thought of, you know, love being a choice and not an obligation, I mean, that sums it up beautifully, because, you know, if you have to be there, it's not as wonderful as somebody choosing to be there. And, you know, you talk about, you know, the balloon, to me that you know, was uplifting, and then the zip lining was the joy, the thrill. To me, you know, the way that you wrote this, it was very lighthearted and sweet, you know, very much talking about, you know, the beauty of being involved in a relationship. You know, you mentioned the work, you know, because, you know, these things kind of don't just happen. But, you know, again, that goes back to it being a choice, you know, and it's very much a choice, you know, whether you're going to fight with somebody or not, or, you know, try and work things out or not. So, you know, all of that wraps up into that idea that you know, well, if you want to be here, it's your choice. You know, you have to be committed to it. You can't just, you know, show up and expect everything to just fall at feet. It doesn't work that way, because, you know, you end up crashing and burning. So, you know, I thought this was beautiful and a great way of describing a relationship.
You
thank
know,
you so
Disney
much,
princesses ruined my adulthood. Because, you know, when you're a kid, Disney princesses are it. That is it. They're like, ooh, that's all I need to do is find myself a modern-day prince, and happiness happens. And as an adult, you're like, well, princes are frogs, and they're also kind of Dracula, and, yeah, there's work involved. Why is this just not what I have to, like, do something after, like, I get the ring? What the heck is that? You know? I'm like, fine, I'll go up. It is fine. Disney's a liar. It's fine. And but, you know, I get that it's work. You know, I've been married forever, and it's work. And, you know, sometimes he's a little a-hole, and sometimes I am a big fat bee. And that is perfectly fine. We all not really, we can't be pleasant 100% of the time, you know?
You know what? I have to pause you for just a second. I love the fact that you just called yourself a bitch, because I call myself that all the time. And so many people get mad. Like, if I call you one, I kind of mean it affectionately, because I know I'm one. So I was thrilled to just call yourself one. Just saying.
I know who I am. Well, here's the thing. People who think that you know, their shit doesn't stink are full of crap. I'm just saying, because nobody is perfect. Everybody gets in a bad mood. You know, sadness happens, anger happens, frustration happens, anxiety happens. Nobody goes through life or even sometimes through a day without, you know, multiple of these things, you know, ebbing and flowing. So you can't always be Little Miss Perfect all the stinking time. And it is...
it's a testament to those who love us that to them, even if we don't see it ourselves, the good outweigh the bad, which I think is interesting because for me, I'm like, why the heck are these people? I am obnoxious. What is my problem today? And why are you still even talking to me? Because I am just in a mood. But when they're in a mood, it doesn't faze me, you know? I'm just like, bad day. Let me see what I can do to make it better. And it's not even a thought. It's not, ugh, I have to baby somebody again. It's not like that. It's just, you know, maybe I need to rub his shoulders, or maybe I need to make my kid's favorite dessert, or, you know, a little something to bring 2 seconds of, oh, that's nice, into a day that's all, ugh. And it doesn't take any extra effort, really. It just, you just know somebody. And I find it interesting that I don't ever question it. I don't ever hold it against them. It doesn't change who I know them to be. But when I'm in a bad mood, I'm like, how the heck does anybody put up with me? You know? So I find that to be an interesting thing because as much as I talk, hubby and not so much. And so he doesn't sit there and internalize the universe. He doesn't sit there like, I don't know how on earth he gets in this world. I don't know how he functions at all. Well, he's probably normal and I'm not. But to me, I'm normal because my whole family's like this, so we're okay. but he doesn't worry about things that he can't change, or if he's waiting on an outcome for something, he's busy doing something else. And I'm all like, how do you not go through every scenario of every possibility so that nothing catches you off guard? Because that's the way my brain works. And he's just like, oh, do you need some wine? I'm like, no, but thanks. And I'm like, I need to calm down. I'm not calm. I am good the way I am, and he is okay with me being this way. And I'm all like, you know, he makes it seem so easy. And so I use these things to justify, you know, why it's easy for me to not think anything of when they're having a bad day, and why I'm so perplexed that when I'm having a bad day, it's like the end all be all, the broken foundation of life. And I mean, it's not that way, obviously, but it's just an interesting internalization or an interesting perspective on things. And I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but maybe not.
Maybe you need to be committed.
Oh my goodness. So Deb had to go and, and she says that AP's birthday party is Saturday at 10 Eastern time, which is awesome. What a fun, fun topic. And so let us see what is on for the rest of the week. I don't see a topic for tomorrow, so I am not sure if Sweet is back with us or if she is still out and about. But on Friday, do we have, what is Friday? Oh, Friday I saw it. Hold on a second. It's not by date on here. I want to say Friday is Liquid Damage's first show on A Team of Voices. It is open poetry at 10 p.m. this Friday. So that should be fun, fun, fun. And so I'm kind of looking forward to that. And then we have the birthday party on Saturday and on Sunday. Sunday is fun day in our sister group, which is the Adult Lounge 18 and over. If you are interested in sensual poetry, we do a private show there that is invitation only. So knock on the door and we just may let you in. So if you're interested, go check that out. And then Personal Prompt Monday is art and the onomatopoeia.
Onomatopoeia.
That's the one, because sometimes I can say it and sometimes my brain does not work. So that's that is fun, 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 fun. So that is what is going on A Team of Voices for the rest of the week. So that is awesome. And we are halfway through our show. I know that we are expecting Mr. JCA to call us soon. And so, do you want me to read you or do you want me to read me?
I prefer to hear your words over mine any day.
Okay, so
I have no problem with the voices in my own head.
Well, today the voices in my head are falling out of my mouth, so that's fun. You know, because some days I have no sense, and this might just be one of them. So, you know, never.
It's a problem when you bottle them up. I think they need to fall out of your mouth.
I don't know. Sometimes I just talk too gosh darn much, or at least that's what my mom always told me while she was talking for 6 hours to people that I never knew. But whatever. This is Eternally Yours. And it's longer than my usual stuff. Not really long, but longer than my usual stuff. And it goes like this. As we are joined, we swear in eternity, sharing our dreams, our joy, our pain, our shame, our sorrow, and most of all, our love. For it is in that love, born of a shared heart and a soul that is complete only within each other, that pain is healed, shame is vanquished, and sorrow is not but the slightest scar dulled by the joy that becomes us together. As we are now, we shall continue to be strength in times of need, a shoulder, an ear, a friend without judgment, honest in all things. We accept each other as we are, always and always. Encourage each other to be the best we can be. Believe in each other without fail and to always be the silver lining should a cloud seem gray. We will be unceasing champions of our love, examples of truth, loyalty, and faith, honored with a chance to try to make every moment happier than the one before. We stand united, unconditionally, and irrevocably bound to love one another without doubt, without question, without fail, always and forever, through each realm of existence and time everlasting. End poem.
You see that? And you say you don't do happy. I almost want to rub your nose in it. I mean, that's gorgeous. You know. Unless you want to bring in the perspective of, you know, the ball and chain and what that really means, you know, the commitment that you're describing and you know, someone's an unwilling, you know, kicking and screaming participant in what you're talking about, that's absolutely, you know, stunning. It's what you would think love is supposed to be. You know? You talk about the silver linings and uplifting each other and, you know, making each other the best of you. It's one of those things where you're kind of calling out some of the stuff that slide that a lot of people tend to overlook or don't see necessarily because, you know, it's just taken for granted, you know. It's gorgeous. That's it's real life, too, and very relatable. You know, you're not talking about, you know, fairy tales and princesses. You're talking about the feelings that you want to foster in each other. And, you know, that's the core of the relationship, you know, because to me, the whole thing when two people are, you know, arguing with each other or in that, you know, that mood, you don't want to be thought of that way. So when you start to hear those kinds of words, it's like, you know, to me, it drives me away. It's like, well, if that's what you think of me, then I should remove myself from the equation because I don't want to make you feel that way. I don't want to be thought of that way. You know, maybe that's selfish, but, you know, it's definitely, you know, turning it around narcissistically. It's focused on me, but, you know, that's what I get out of that. It's like, well, if that's what I do to you, then I shouldn't be in the picture then. I need to get away because, you know, well, if all I'm doing is causing you pain, then I need to run. So, you know, you're talking about the lighter side of it, the beautiful end of it, and it's stunning.
That's amazing, actually. It truly, truly is. And we have a caller. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Jay. How you doing
tonight?
Hey,
I'm doing good. Just finished with work, and I'm it's been a long time since I've walked home and called the show at the same time, so I'm doing that right now.
Oh, multitasking. You're better than me.
I can't even, you know, I can't walk and chew gum or talk and chew gum. I am one thing at a time these days. I'm just saying. So yeah, tonight's show. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say we have other callers that are breathing heavy while they're calling, but it's not because they're walking. So, you know.
Well, maybe not this show.
Well, yeah, you're on the wrong show where they're at. Come on.
It's so much the show. It's Pretty Bird's voice.
Well, you know, I can't help what I sound like. But, yeah, so tonight it is all things commitment, committed, you know, whether it's crazy or crimes, whether it is love or work or friendship, whatever it means to you, that is what it is about. I just read my poem, which was this kind of almost wedding vow sounding thing. So I was going to comment on what Rack said. I think it's funny, Rack, where you're like, this is a beautiful side and that's a mess. And I wrote this with a very keen eye for including the mess, you know,
uh-huh.
where it's the pain, the shame, the sorrow, all the broken scars, all of the stuff that can be healed. Yes. And, you know, and this is to be, you know, strength in times of need, you know, when you need that shoulder or an ear or all of these things. And so I thought I was all, you know, embracing the reality of daily life in any relationship where, you know, sometimes it sucks and this is how you see things through. But it's funny how I was very, very focused on, and I wrote this million years ago, but I remember being very focused on, you know, this is all the things that suck and this is why it's less so, you know? And it's interesting that, because I don't know that I ever actually noticed or thought of while writing this, I mean, I have in real life, where, you know, these are all the things that suck. You're like, well, then fine, then I'm leaving, you know? So I found that very, very interesting. I mean, you're right. I mean, if you're in a relationship where somebody's like, you make me feel fat and you make me feel ugly and you make me feel useless, well, then obviously I am not good for you. So,
yeah.
You know, but then that calls into question what we were talking about before. When do you fight? How hard do you work? And what happens when one side works harder than the other? And all of these messes of human nature. And you know, there's that old, I don't know, cliche, adage, whatever you want to call it, because my brain can't find words, any relationship is not 50-50. It's 100% each all the time. And I want to call bullshit, by the way, simply because sometimes people are the shoulder and sometimes, you know, people are shedding the tears, and the way somebody is needed changes daily, changes moment to moment. And you can't be equal 100%. Sometimes you need to hold somebody up a little bit longer. Sometimes you need to lean on somebody because you're not strong enough in that moment. And whether it is a minute or a week or however long it takes to get through whatever it is, it's not uh-huh. always equal. But the desire to work through it is absolutely has to be that, that's 100%. I believe in forever because I just do. And I figure, it's why I ended up, basically saying, I'm not getting married. I'm not getting married in a Catholic church, because let me tell you what, if we cannot get an annulment, we ain't getting divorced, you know? So, because that's a 35-page inquisition of being judged harshly for giving up. So,
yeah.
It's just not a thing. It's not an option for me unless it is detrimental to my children or detrimental to my well-being in some kind of way, whether it's physical, emotional, whatever. but I'm pretty resilient, and so nothing really, it doesn't ever get to that, and I have a big mouth, and I think once you set boundaries in a relationship that everybody agrees on, then it's easier to talk about when a toe goes over the line or worse, because it's already there, you agreed on it, and now we have to discuss, you know, the faux pas, whatever it may be, how little or big it is, and then move on and work through it. I know people that have these on-again, off-again things. I know people that move out and move back in, and I'm getting divorced, and then they come back 3 weeks later. Dude, if you leave my house, take a shit, don't come back, because no. I was like, do not ever say divorce to me. I'm telling you, do not say it unless you are ready to walk out the door at that moment, because if you're thinking it, I'm done, because you can't be like, I should leave. And then, you know, somebody makes you a cheesecake. You're like, okay, maybe I'll stay. I mean, we're not 12, you know? And so that was like one of my hard rules. Do not, you don't get to walk out and not come home, even for a night. You don't get to leave and have me not know where you are. We do not say divorce unless whoever says it is ready, is packed and ready to go. And I don't do do-overs. So we were good at that. And we're here a million years later, so I guess that's a good thing. I mean, it's not easy, you know. Things suck. People suck. People have bad reactions for misconceptions and misperceptions, and people are people, and humans are fallible. You know, so, you know, it's not like everything is a bed of roses all the time. But I would rather, you know, I would rather drudge through the muck with somebody that I can trust than frolic in a field of flowers with somebody that, you know, lies to me all the time. I value different things than some people, I suppose. But, I mean, but seriously, yeah. Anyway, I've been talking a lot tonight. My apologies, Jay. So what are your thoughts on commitment? Like, with the word commitment, commit, committed, what is the first thing that pops in your head?
First thing that pops into my head probably is honesty. You know, if someone's going to say that they're going to be committed, they're going to have to be honest about the level of commitment they want to put in. Because as soon as they, turn around and say that they're, you know, 100% in, but then they turn around and say, oh, you know, I'm just not feeling it, you know, what does that make you feel about them and how you move forward? I mean, if you're going to say it, mean it.
You know, and that's the whole thing. People throw the L word around like you know, like they love chocolate ice cream. And the thing
is, I do love chocolate ice cream.
Well, yeah, you know. But it's not, you know, you can love a lot of things, or you can really like a lot of things, but if you say I love you to somebody, there, you know, it means different things to different people. And I think that that's the it's kind of like if you say F you to somebody, some, you know, the right people in the right context is some funny stuff. Sometimes people want to punch you in the face. Sometimes they misconstrue things because they don't use words like that. So it's a mess. And love is a scary concept because they can love you like a friend. They can have a great deal of affection for you. They can be romantically in love. They can be whatever. And to just be like, just I love you, and not qualify that at some point prior or after, that's where, you know, neuroses sets in, because how do you not overthink that, you know? And
you know, that was the beauty about the Hebrew language. They had different words for different types of love, you know, where the agape is the unconditional love, the phileo is the brotherly love, the eros is the passionate sexual love. So different words in their languages meant different things. and that's where the English language is limited.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because in today's society, there's a lot of very powerful, poignant things that have become so flip. It's not funny, where people say things like it means nothing, and it's a sad thing that words don't carry weight. Love being one of them, hate being another one, where everybody's like, "Oh, I hate you." Well, no, you don't. You're just, you know, annoyed or frustrated or embarrassed or whatever it is. And when you get comfortable saying a word like hate, it comes out in unfortunate, unexpected ways. And if you love somebody, if you've got a good friend and they're like absolutely in love with you and they say something to you and you snap at them, "Oh, did I hate you so much right now?" Well, no part of love is hate. And that, you don't really get over that. That bites somebody back. And that, yep. You know, it changes that comfort or that freedom you have to just be who you are or say what you want. And people don't even notice it, because if they didn't mean anything by it and they didn't really mean it that way, then they don't think that it's going to bother somebody. And nobody's going to be like, "You hurt my feelings," because, you know, nobody wants to be all butthurt. Yeah. And ooh. So it can be a mess that I'm a big proponent of precision of language. So the more you talk to me, the more you'll understand that I'm not actually being a condescending asshat. I am, you know, I say something and then I clarify almost immediately sometimes. And ask Rack, he's like, "Yeah, I understood you." I'm like, I had to. You know, because when you get misunderstood so often, you kind of just, you know, have to explain yourself as you go. Because if someone's going to ask you as much as I talk, if somebody's going to ask me 5 minutes from now what I meant by what I said 5 minutes ago, I'm like, "I have no clue what the heck I was talking about. I can't help you. I'm sorry." You know? So
yeah. The whole thing is your intention may not be someone else's perception.
This is true, and everybody's experiences make that different. And part of the human condition is that body, for the most part, expects people to react in some way, shape, or form close to the way they would. Like, they don't understand why somebody would react totally different or totally opposite or totally whatever, but everybody's individual. And how crazy is it that we expect anybody else to be exactly the same as we are? But that's just how you expect things. Well, I would never. Yeah, but that doesn't mean they wouldn't, you know?
I used to love that song, "Oh Lord, Please Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood."
Story of my life. Because, you know, I say things. Okay, I'm going to sound like a complete, just obnoxious idiot. However many years ago, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I moved to a very small backwoods town in Central Florida. I mean, like, we're lucky to find people that have a full grill, like a full set of teeth, and made it out of middle school. And that's just the way things were here. There wasn't a whole lot around. You know, people worked their farms, you know, their cattle, their whatever. And it was just different. So you have people my age or older that are completely uneducated and stuff. And I don't ever think that I use ginormous words, but I just talk the way I talk. And when I was running my kids' Cub Scout pack, I had one of the other leaders come up to me and be like, "Listen, everybody's intimidated by you because you make them feel stupid." And I was just like, "What I do?" You know, because I had no clue. Because I'm as nice as can be. I tend to tell people the way I see things, and then I'm, you know, but I don't expect a lot of anybody. I think I'm nice, but oh yeah, no. The way I talk was really. They it comes off sometimes because I tend to be I grew up in a very loud Latin family and, you know, from New York, no less. And so everybody's got that kind of mile a minute speech pattern. So when you go someplace where everything is a slow drawl, first of all, they can't keep up with you. Second of all, they don't know half your words because you actually use all of your syllables. And here they don't. I mean, I had no idea. First of all, they say things like used to could, which crept its way into my language. It came out of my mouth once. I said, I have lived here too long with the used to could. That is not okay. And I don't know what I started to say. Oh, so yeah, so people, I was misunderstood in a big way. I was intimidating. People thought that I was fully condescending. I wasn't. I was just explaining things as best I could, not realizing that I had to change how I spoke to make other people feel comfortable, because I don't ever expect anybody to change who they are for me. You know what I mean? So it wasn't a thing that I was used to. And so I'm always misunderstood.
Can you speak that out for me?
Yep. And so I'm always misunderstood, which is why in my close friendships and relationships, I make it a point of trying to clarify, because I don't want that to happen. You know, only they get annoyed with me. Like, you know, you don't have to do that. I'm sorry. I was trained this way. So, you know.
That can't help.
That's my little sideways story. So I love that. Oh, I appreciate that. I love that you equate commitment with honesty, because anybody who's ever heard any of my shows or talked to me for 2 seconds knows that I hold honesty above all else across the board. I don't care if you treat me like crap. If you are honest and never lie to me, I can still find respect for you as a person. I may not like you. I may not want to be around you, but I can still respect you. Where if I love somebody and they lie to me repeatedly, especially with no apologies, no whatever, they treat me like they think I don't know things, I don't get over that. I have a very hard time working through that in a way that makes me feel comfortable in that friendship or relationship. It will redefine the parameters of who I think they are, because I'm not a liar. You know, I am so honest that it is off-putting. That it was, since I was 18 years old, has been my my buffer. It has been, it kept away the riffraff, because not everybody can take that kind of honesty. And it's not that I'm brutal, because I don't believe honesty has to be brutal. There's a way to word things. It doesn't mean that you have to be mean. But people don't like somebody that's that open, because it makes them uncomfortable, because very few people live that openly, you know. And so it cut out the riffraff. This is what, people love me or hate me, it just cuts them out. You don't like my honesty, you don't need to be here, goodbye. You know,
you're not a liar, more of a harpy.
I'm something. So Mr. JCA, did you bring us a poem?
I dropped it in the topics, believe it or not. I just finished writing it.
Awesome. I was like, I didn't see it, but since you just finished writing it, I don't feel bad.
Yeah, about 45 minutes ago, I finished writing it, I think, something like that.
That is
maybe
awesome.
Even sooner, but yeah, I was like, oh, I got to get something for Birdie. So I'm like,
that's
yeah, let
awesome.
Me go get something.
So
all right.
That's an awesome picture, by the way.
Yeah, this picture was the prompt, so... I guess I finished it about 20 minutes ago. Okay. And I call this On the Tip of Your Tongue. You turn me to the clear liquid puddle with the reaches in my cracked bone ribs, whispers reaching from beyond the emerald forest and the azure water whitecaps. Monolithic soldier, the aquamarine cast iceberg, floating in the sweet cream crests of the turquoise Arctic sea, waiting to sink the next Titanic.
but on your satin lips sits the orange star that twirls the snow-capped Alberta clipper into the jasmine Caribbean breezes, that steams the compacted snow in my titanium lungs to water the malachite orchid and the purple jade hibiscus. If music heals wounds neath bruised sternum, I will break my frozen jaw and commit to sing for a thousand dawns to see you smile, dance spoonbill tangos under the coconut fronds, recite Gilbran prose upon the silk skin, and I turn to steam on the tip of your tongue.
Oh, you know, where is it? Where is it? Where's the line that, here. I will break my frozen jaw and commit to sing for a thousand dawns to see you smile. That is like a standalone, just, that is freaking amazing. That is just absolutely beautiful. I see there's a lot I see. Okay, listen, I've been seeing 16 sides of everything tonight, and I'm sure all of them are wrong. So I'm just going to, you know, talk for the next hour like I've been doing, and y'all are going to have to shut me up. You turn me to the clear liquid puddle with the reaches in my cracked bone ribs, whispers reaching from beyond the emerald forest. And it's like, you know, I love that. You turn me into a clear liquid puddle. And there is something about icy defenses. There is something about keeping your distance. There is something about keeping yourself safe behind that hardened armor until somebody finds whatever the kryptonite is to break you free from that and make you want to be vulnerable, because mostly defenses come from pain, which means you were vulnerable before and that didn't work. So it is a powerful thing to encase yourself in ice and still reach for the touch of that fire, knowing it's going to leave you naked. It is a glorious, glorious metaphor. It's beautifully visual and visceral, and I love that. I love words that pull you out of the now and into an emotion, whether it be a familiar one, and it doesn't matter. It takes you somewhere else, and that is just stunning. The magic of poetry. There is a line here. There's many lines here. Okay, well, I'll just read the whole thing because that's just me. But on your satin lips sits the orange star that twists the snow-capped Alberta clipper into the jasmine Caribbean breezes that steams the compacted snow in my titanium lungs to water the malachite orchids. You know, and here's the thing. When you brace yourself for every emotion, for every moment, when you are in that safe zone where people think you're normal, but there is a big distance between where they think they reach and how far away you keep them, but it steams the compacted snow in my titanium lungs, so they are encased in hardened metal that is then frozen. So that is a double-decker kind of armor, and in a breath you're breathing, in a breath it's melted, in a breath you belong to someone else, and that is a beautiful thing to be able to share yourself that way. Now I am going to shut up because I will probably talk for like ever. And so I loved you. I love malachite orchids. Malachite is this, I don't know, copper-based, I think, stone. It looks like green swirly oceans. It is really quite beautiful. It's not like, it's opaque. It's not like
a gem or whatever that's crystal based. It's just, it looks like swirling green pools, and it's just beautiful. I personally like it. I find it more interesting than emeralds, you know? I mean, emeralds sparkle mm-hmm. and whatnot, but they have no character, in my opinion. You know, I'm just saying. So I love that you chose that. So Rack and Tour, what are your thoughts? You know, what thoughts are on the tip of your tongue?
he went at this, I think, in a very methodical way, kind of pulled out a toolbox, I think, and he decided, you know, what he wanted. He's got, you know, spoonbills and he's got, you know, the different stones, the gemstones, the different colors. He's got all these bits and pieces that he wove together to describe this emotion that's kind of trapped inside of him that she's pulling out of him to describe the whole emotional relationship. And, you know, he did it in a lovely way because, you know, each little bit has its own voice almost. And he, you know, orchestrated it, composed it into this chorus that just sang.
It was lovely. So,
thank you.
So what were you envisioning? Was it just to the prompt, or did it take you outside yourself into a vulnerable spot when you wrote it?
Probably a little bit of both. I wanted to go ahead and somehow I was like, because I did not get your, I'll be honest, I didn't get to read about your show until about, hold on, I want to see when I finished writing the last poem before this. So I'm like, about 3 hours ago is when I first saw your show. And I was like, I want to write for this because this is a great prompt. But let me see what picture I can weave into this. And I found this picture, Blue Butterfly. This won her contest, and she happens to be one of my favorite contest runners. She always has some amazing pictures when she does this. And I'm like, If this isn't the perfect description of how commitment should be, you know what? We do make ourselves vulnerable at times, and there's sometimes a fire within someone else that melts what we have and turns us into something different. And that's what I saw within this picture. I'm like, okay, it is something that when they come together, when fire and ice comes together, eventually it forms steam.
Yeah.
And there's something that just opens that up in both people. You know, it's not just one person opening up, it's both people learning to open up in certain ways. And you'll find that sometimes it'll go both ways, freezing part of it not only is within the person who considers themselves frigid and that the other person is firing them up, but also the person who they see as the fire sometimes has a protected part about them too. And it's
absolutely
just what are we bringing to each other that is opening each other up? And that's what I see within something like this. Are you willing to stick it out to accept them as they are in order to get beyond this moment in time? And are you willing to accept their vulnerabilities? Are you willing to accept their weaknesses and their hurts and their pains? Because commitment is an accepting of a person as they are, not accepting of a person as you want them to be.
This is true. And there's something about people's defense mechanisms. You've got those that internalize the ice and those that spit vitriol on everybody else to keep them at bay, and that's the fire. And there's this metaphorical spirituality is the way I it's what I glean out of the steam, where this one knocks back that one, and this one opens up that one, and them together, you know, form, I don't know, it's like the sum is greater than the whole of its parts, you know, and that's a beautiful thing, and there's safety in that, and I don't know that people think about that often, or if they haven't gone through any friendship or relationship like that, that they actually understand. There is a huge, people can only be truly who they are, good or bad, when they feel safe, which brings you back to that honesty and that trust. But how do you feel safe until you show them the worst part to you? You know, there's always a little bit like, well, if they really knew how I can get, they would run in a heartbeat, you know. And so there's something really beautiful about being that vulnerable enough to change what life taught you to be. So I really truly enjoyed that. I did. I'm loving the differences and the different aspects of the poems that have been brought in tonight. It's just, it's lovely. Sky brought like this whole like commitment to responsibility of her shows, and brought this fabulous Star Wars one, because you know that's a huge commitment for her. It's like, you know, a year plus of things that she's researched, and I was just like, I'm like flabbergasted. And you know, and then Kay brought an anniversary tribute for her and Stephen, who've been together a quarter century, and that's amazing. And it was this beautiful dancing metaphor. And Deb was bringing all of these like logistical tethers, but with a little bit of hope, I can get to you wherever you are in an instant. And that was just lovely. And then here you are with this, that to me feels very spiritual and it's beautiful. And I am loving this. I put this up 2 weeks ago and kind of just left it there, because I knew that today was my anniversary and I was like, all right, this is what we're doing. Okay, we're good. And I hadn't thought about it, and a whole lot's been happening here. And so I was just thrilled that people brought such a variety of fabulousness. Jay, would you do me the honor of reading Mr. Raconteur?
I can. Hold on.
Thank you.
Choir Boy by Raconteur. Concerto of anguish sang in vows that ring hollow, accompanied by hell's bells, your white dress stained crimson by the outpouring of a chest muscle that blindly swells. Loyal to a fault, you bear the weight of every betrayal. Each sunrise adds to your collection of wounds, once unblemished skin, now a roadmap covered in scars that read like runes. Miraculously, you persevere, clinging to the hope of tomorrow, refusing to drown. You draw strength from your sorrow. Never forget, you are brilliant and beautiful, not just bloodied and broken. And if you don't believe it, then you haven't heard a word that I've spoken. Poem.
You know, Raconteur, Concerto of Anguish will be stolen and be titled on something in the future. I am just telling you that. That is a stunning way to open that, because you are familiar with my thoughts on pain, where there is emotion by design is irrational. And there are many facets of you know, love, hate, whatever the heck, anger, whatever. But pain is pure. It doesn't matter what type of pain it is. It always hurts. And there's beauty in that. So to equate that with music is kind of lovely and, you know, a little morose, but lovely. And so I kind of, that speaks to me. You know, the saying in vows that ring hollow, which is heartbreaking because, you know, vows and weddings and now empty promises and broken lives and your white dress stained crimson by the outpouring of a chest muscle that blindly swells. Now, whose chest muscle is that? Now, is it him bleeding all over her because he's swelling and she's hollow? Or is it that she's trying and it's going nowhere and is pouring all over herself while she doesn't realize she's bleeding out? But either way, I'm sure I'm wrong. But there's a visual there that is kind of lovely, and which is apparently my word of the day. Loyal to a fault, you bear the weight of every betrayal. Yeah, don't I know it? You know, it's funny. People think, or often think, because I don't want to, you know, say everybody's the same, because we're not. People often think that loyalty is a sliding scale. Like you can grade it on a curve. Like, well, since nobody you know has ever been loyal, then this mediocre loyalty is now, you know, the holy grail to try to reach. And it doesn't work that way. You're either loyal or you're not, you know. You either have faith in the relationship or you doubt. And it's okay to have doubts in yourself. It's okay to question who you're growing into, because we're always growing. But you can't build a relationship on a broken foundation, you know. And when you bear the weight of every betrayal and you count betrayals in minutia, it changes how you see the world, but it doesn't stop you from feeling it. So this breaks me, you know. And this whole flesh that reads like runes, and all of these scars and wrinkles of time and whatever it is, where runes are used to define a future. If you're talking rune stones, then they are, you know, what I would imagine hope looks like in a life that leaves you battered. And it is, well, I guess with the next thing, you know, miraculously you persevere. So, you know, you go through it all and there you are. And how can this person not feel less than? How can somebody see that they are brilliant when they're broken, that they are beautiful when they're bloodied, that her faults in trusting too much or caring too much or believing too much are her fault? And I would assume that it's something she defines herself as or by, because she wears them on her skin and doesn't hide from them. So how can she look at that and not see anything but pain and ugliness? And for somebody to look at that and see beautiful and brilliant, this is lovely. This is gorgeous. This is heartrending. And so there's that. All kinds of deepness, Mr. Man. So JCA, what are your thoughts?
After all this has passed, I still will remain. After I've cried my last, there'll be beauty from pain. That's from a song called Beauty from Pain. And this is what I read within this. Is when people look at themselves and they beat themselves up and everything else, they can't see the beauty within them. But in reality, they are still beautiful. They're still miraculous that they are people and they are survivors and they keep going on. And it's like I always say, when you take a look at a gemstone, like I love to bring in the fact of corundum, which is rubies and sapphires. The only thing that can cut a ruby or sapphire is either another ruby or sapphire or a diamond. There's nothing harder that can cut them. So in order to make them quote-unquote beautiful, they have to be chipped. They have to be cut. They have to be polished. They have to go through a beating, per se. They have to be have all of these scars in order to make them into a beautiful stone. And when you take a look at people themselves, people get battered, they get bruised, they get hurt, they get all of this. And I love how you put it at the end there, Rack. You're brilliant and beautiful, not just bloodied and broken. And it's through the parts of the bloodied and broken thing that people turn out to be beautiful. And ultimately, they turn out to be that stone that's being faceted, that's being cut, that's being chipped. And they're turning into something that is even more beautiful with their pain and their hurt, because they're becoming a complete person. And where they are today is where they're meant to be. Never, ever feel bad or look upon your life and say you'd like to change some this or that, because if you were to change this or that, you would never be where you are today and where you're going to be tomorrow. And you would not know all that you need to know, and you never learned any of the lessons that you've learned. You're more beautiful today than you have ever been in your life, and you will be more beautiful tomorrow than you are today.
I love it.
That reminds me about, well, twofold. It's usually those that think they're the most broken that are the most beautiful. Like, it's, they will never see themselves as not broken because they're the ones who live through the pain. But those are the ones that when they can make it through with that good heart, they tend to be wildly empathetic, and they don't let anybody else suffer alone or go, well, you know what I mean. And they're just beautiful people. But what you were saying reminds me of, and I'm probably getting it wrong because I can't pronounce crap tonight, the Japanese art or thought or of
Kintsugi.
And which is gorgeous. I've always loved that. It's one of those practices that I find so moving. You know, also a little perplexing, but so moving, where they take broken pieces of pottery and they put them back together with gold, making it stronger and giving it that character that now it's more beautiful. You know, it's more beautiful for having been broken, and that is absolutely stunning. But when it comes to, like, vases and stuff and things that hold water, my thing is, well, how many times do you have to, like, patch it with more gold to fill in those little powdery broken cracks that you can't sweep up and put it back in its place? Because when things break, it's not like they break in half or in these even smooth pieces. I mean, there's, like, little, you know? And so I love the notion. I love the idea. It reminds me of Sesame Street and Louise's Fix-It Shop, because, you know, we live in a world where if it's broken, throw it away and get a new one, you know? But there was a time that, you know, you actually went to go get things fixed. And and the society being this instant gratification kind of place it's turned into, unfortunately, people fall into that category of, if it's too much work, I'll just get new friends. I can't be bothered. And nobody, it's hard to find people, especially younger people, that want to work through things. There's fear, there's awkwardness, there's people barely talk to each other in real life when standing next to each other. They're all texting 2 feet away from each other. And nobody wants to fix things. Nobody wants to work through things. It's just easier to just get a new one and move on. And so I love the idea of this. I love that our generation is still, for the most part, you know, holds on to that, you know, you fight for things that you feel are worthy. And that includes people, you know, and you know, I had a rear projection big screen TV. I didn't get it new. I got it like on Craigslist like a million years ago, and it lasted forever. And one of the weird giant bulbs in the back broke, and I searched everywhere for one, not because I didn't want a new TV, and you know, but because it was a bulb, and if I can find a bulb, I can just, you know, take the thing off, stick that junk in there, and still have it. Why, you know, just get a new TV? And a lot of my friends were like, well, you need a flat screen. No, I don't. This one works. We're good. I mean, it was the one that the kids did anyway, and it was huge. And I had a lot of small kids at the time, and not for nothing, if I'm going to spend a stupid amount of money on a flat screen TV, it's going to have to be like embedded in the wall behind plexiglass because my kids are brutal. And so I was like, no, we're good. We will wait till this one completely dies. And that's how I am with friends. I don't let a lot of people in, but the ones I let in, I mean, I can fight and argue and have whatever discussions, and it can get ugly. But if I let you in, I will call you the next day and be like, we good? All right, we're good. And if that conversation doesn't go that easy, then I will talk with them, talk them out, every little bit of minutia for you know, however many days it takes, so that we are good. Because when you care about somebody, they you don't throw them away. They're not garbage. They're hard to walk away from. Don't get me wrong. People are fallible. Human nature kind of sucks sometimes. You know, as a species, we tend to be as selfish as we are giving, you know. And so sometimes for your own sanity, for your own emotional well-being, you need to run even if it hurts. But generally speaking, well, not generally speaking, for me, I've never walked away from anybody. If they are my people, they have to leave, you know, and which, by the way, puts me in a shitty spot because everybody always leaves at some point, and then that feels like crap. But I don't know any other way, and it never occurred to me to let that change me, you know. If I love you, if you are part of my spirit family or part of my friends that I have embraced into my world completely, well, you know, you're just as much family as my sister is, you know, and that's a real thing. And so it's hard when people that have, you know, that have 150 acquaintances in real life, and they have friends that they go shopping with, and friends that they tell their troubles to, and different friends that they do like crafts with, and different friends when they have all these little factions of friends that all serve a purpose, it's easy to interchange them with new people that come. It's easy to have that influx, that ebb and flow of people. They don't all weigh the same. But when you have, like, you know, 10 friends, like, over time that know you, you lose one, and it's a big chunk of who you are, you know? So, I don't know. I say way too much about myself on my show, so I'm going to just shut the heck up. We are 7 minutes out, so, Jay, why don't you tell us what you have coming up?
I will in a second. I want to make one point, though. Kintsugi, it is not kind of something to repair it. It is actually a process which adds to the history of the item.
It is. But it does it in making the piece whole again. And in making it whole, it is now
more valuable. It is now more beautiful. It is now stronger. But so absolutely. But, you know, I get stuck in minutiae things all the time. So that's my unfortunate brain.
All right. Here's what we got going on. Il No Sereno, we're getting the living room going on Thursday at noon Eastern. We are having an open day because we have an event that's going on as well. We have a sign-up for something called Prompt Your Partner. And what we're going to have doing is people sign up, and then they're randomly going to get a partner. And then we have something called the Prompts Pile, which is a bunch of prompts. And you're going to pick a prompt out for your partner to write a poem on. And your partner is going to pick a prompt out for you. And it's going to be a fun little event just to bring everybody together. And then we're going to read those poems on a later date. But definitely, if anybody wants to sign up for that, we are more than excited to present that. And like I said, we're going to have a little bit of open discussion, open poetry this Thursday.
Well, that's awesome. That sounds like fun. What about you, Rack? You got anything coming up?
I got no clue.
Well, when you get one, and I know sometimes that's few and far between because I'm the same way, make sure that you know, we put it up on the board and don't forget to tell people all about it. And that is it for my show on commitment. And I'm sure that y'all probably think I should be committed after the way I jibber-jabbered about everything and everything else. But it was a very fun show. I'm so thrilled that you made it, Jay. And thank you, Kay, for hanging out on the board and sharing that beautiful, beautiful poem. And for Sky, who came to visit us past her bedtime, and Deb and Titus. I didn't play Titus! I love you, Titus. I'm playing you now. You'll be able to hear
everything. Yeah, we have time. Let's do it.
My goodness. I am horrible. I always play him early. My brain is broken. Okay, I'm putting him up on the board. Titus, I absolutely adore you. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Okay, it is on the board. Oh, my brain. And it goes like this.
Let death not be displaced and found afar. Look down on that dead of night, for whom to dispatch more self than thou, I'm sure. A hint, if might I ask, would turn to stealth. A wealth of words has seen me laid to care for this, but right from wrong, care nonetheless for life. Will not a share of this be stark, or has it be more than dark? A still but asked for claim to fame, be it subtle or not, to freedom its need to do the same. Let me withhold this spot, that my entrance be such a dream to whom it was a length of time. No concern to be sought, yet this, from where I stand, it was somehow fated, not planned. It was such to make me a slave, whom deservedly would be, a soul to whom it was shall save, all it can to mimic thee. To rove with praise the joy of peace, let ease the will to withhold cease, self-immersed to potpourri. At least to stay thou canst do wrong, to shed some light where I belong. It could be still that death has raised, it may as well be said, it took a life from thine once praised, shall never more be dead. How peaceful can one's longing for be needed, as to ask for more, if it be to request that, whilst the soul be still aware, to roam as one's own said affair. The persist is carried soon attached to the ethereal state, shores found naturally matched, from which it shall relate as yet known as a subtle blend, to which all substances end to end belonging to those sedate, where fusion can of late be soul, to grace what change it makes as whole. Remove thy inert embroiled. When you see nothing poor of this plight, the unknown spoiled, shall none be foraged more. That day completes when death has passed. Could it be true betrayed as the last exceptions cause without? Like a long path, headlong in haze, does unrest seem for now, always.
Oh, I always get lulled by your background because the way you write, it's like it takes my brain to like the Renaissance, and not because it's all, it's not like it's archaic. It's very relevant. It's just so beautiful that it just carries me off, and it carries me off like every single time. I don't think I've read anything or heard you read anything that isn't just stunning. And thank you for my SoundCloud that I'm going to be attaching to my poem, because I've had a heck of a week, and so I will get around to doing that. So thank you for that beautiful, beautiful gift. But this poem, it's very heavy, and you know, it speaks to me of what we were talking about earlier, guys, where there is that beauty in pain, you know, where there is that beauty and you know, not for nothing, you know, committed or not, love hurts, you know, not to sound all, you know, cliche and, you know, old rock song about it, but it's that vulnerability or that the embracing of another soul, that when they pass or when they pass through your life and they are no more within reach, there is a longing there that the persist is carried soon attached to the ethereal state. How beautiful a line is that? You know, shore is found naturally matched from which it shall relate. I can't rhyme for beans. I mean, not in this wonderfully wrapped, like, by wrapped, I mean word wrapped, not like, you know, gangster rap way that he speaks and that he writes. It's this flow that just pulls you through kind of watching somebody die, you know, through that person. And I'm probably wrong about everything, because Lord knows I am really good at getting things wrong, but just because it's not what's meant, it does mean it's not there. That day complete when death has passed, could it be portrayed to the last? Like a lone path, headlong in a haze, this unrest seem for now, always. Oh, you know, it's hard to find peace. It's hard to find peace within yourself. It's hard to find peace out of the person that you leaned on and made you feel peaceful. And if they are no longer there, will anything ever seem right? And I'm just in awe of the beauty. I really am. This weighs heavy to me, and it is sitting on the I was gonna say skin of my heart, but the heart doesn't have skin, but it's muscle. But you know what I mean. And it's sitting there, and it'll probably reach me in my sleep and be there when I wake up tomorrow, because it has really just that my entrance be such a dream to whom it was a length of time. You know, I love this. So, Rack and Tor, what are your thoughts on Titus's magic?
Yeah, he's got a way of I want to say speaking, but, you know, this is more than speech. You know, it just sounds natural, and you know, the story flows and the rhythm, the cadence, all of it. It's just a wonderful story. And then he throws in that background music and his tone of voice, you know, I can't help but picture like monks and robes and theme and candles. I mean, it's just phenomenal listening to his storytelling. You know, like you said, it kind of carries you away. And it's not that it's old. It just, you know, feels, I guess, I want to say Buddhist and otherworldly, you know, very zen and very lovely. Whether it's Ed, that sadness talking about and you know, the love that's wrapped up in that and losing someone and you know, how you feel when they come. I mean, the commitment when someone comes into your life. I mean, he just kind of leaves all of us tonight at least speechless.
A little bit. MJ, I see that Ed, he put this on one of your living room shows, so this is not a first for you. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, when you take a look at how he writes, he actually, I actually felt like he brought us there. We were sitting at the bedside while everything was going on. It's like he has this ability to translate us into a moment, translate us into a time. And that's what this was right here. I think that this was absolutely stunning the way he put this together. And, you know, this was written... Look at when this was written. It was written 12 years ago.
Oh, so he's just always brilliant. Fine.
He's always been brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. He's always had a stunning voice, a stunning storytelling voice, and I love the way that he brings things together.
You know, it's funny. If you read a lot of people, and on all poetry, we have that wonderful gift of being, you know, having access to whatever poems people keep up. And some of us have been here a long time. And so you can see when they first started on AP, not necessarily when they first started writing, because those can be two very different things, and the way things ebb and flow and they fall more into themselves or they find a style that they like. And you see these little changes. But I tell you what, he could have written this yesterday, and we could, and it's 12 years ago, and we can take one from 12 years ago, 5 years ago, you know, yesterday and tomorrow, and they'll all just be these transcendental, fabulous, fabulous pieces, and they do, they weigh, and they sit in your emotions, and sometimes he can be very extravagant in his metaphors. They're always pristine. They're always very well thought out and beautifully depicted. But sometimes they are beautifully. It's almost like it's handmade lace. And so for people that write in a confessional style or in a more modern style or in a less artistic style, it can be a little bit hard to fall into word-wise. But even if that happens to be the case, I have never seen anyone not fall into the emotion of it, you know? And he was brilliant 12 years ago. He is brilliant today. He will be brilliant tomorrow. And I'm not jealous, it's fine. But there's a beauty, an elegance with which he writes that makes me want to pull out my quill. And when I say quill, I mean an actual like ink, like quill, because I've got like three of them that I never use because they're too pretty, but it makes me want to, like, because there's something magical about old writing utensils that to me might just make me write better just because it's fabulous. And so I don't use them because A, they're too pretty and I'm probably wrong and I don't want to know that. So I like the dream, but this makes me want to, makes me want to reach for anything that might give me another loop in my own lace. And to be inspired by somebody's way of writing or flow of speech, to be inspired by somebody's artistic prowess is a beautiful, beautiful thing. My dog is snoring. Do you hear that? That's embarrassing. And he does that. He really, really does that. I usually sleep on it and think better of it because I ain't no Titus, but he inspires me to want to be more beautifully written. And I think that is a fabulous, fabulous thing because that's not an easy thing to do. It takes a lot to inspire me to do any gosh darn thing. I'm kind of lazy. If you don't know that about, I really am. I'm lazy, but I love that he's one of the few people that do that for me. Now, I mean, don't get me wrong. I could read a poem, like one poem by a person, and that could like motivate me to write either to a similar prompt or it'll remind me of something that I went through. I want to put that down, but that's a different kind of inspiration or motivation. This is a very consistent elegance, a very beautiful. Okay, take his sonnets. Sonnets are the bane of my existence. I can write perfect iambic pentameter when I try, but because I have to try, I don't like doing it because to me, poetry is a very free-flowing, visceral thing. And to me, because I know I have to go da-da, 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 it always sounds like that. I don't have that grace, you know? I don't care how good my words are, it will never sound like this beautifully, naturally written piece. And he can basically sneeze out a sonnet like it's nothing, and I couldn't even tell you if it was Shakespeare or not because he's that good. So, Titus, you are brilliant. I'm kind of glad that you closed the show. I do apologize that you didn't get to hear the whole thing and all our comments live, but hopefully you will be listening once this is open in the recording. So you are loved, and thank you for sharing this with us. You are fabulous. And with that, I am going to, unless you guys have something else to say, I'm going to say goodnight. And just thank you so much for sharing time, all of you, and for writing to what commitment means to you. I love the discussion.
Yeah. I will mention one more thing if anybody wants to check me out on Instagram, juancarlosa.poetry. I do lives every Friday and Saturday at midnight Eastern time, and we do poetry.
That sounds like fun. So awesome, awesome,
that's
awesome. So go check him out, and I will see you guys next time. Have a wonderful evening.
All right.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Good night.
Good night.